Ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to our annual analysts and investors conference. I'm very pleased that so many of you have found the time to attend, both here in Frankfurt and also on the phone. First of all, let me introduce to you your today's hosts. To your left, Alexander Geis, our new CEO.
Good morning.
Next to me, our CFO, Dr. Matthias Heiden.
Me.
After the presentation, you will have the chance to ask questions. Now I would like to hand over to Mr. Geis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Good morning, everybody. A lot of familiar faces. Let me start introducing myself for those who don't know me. My name is Alexander Geis. I'm still the President Europe for the SAF Holland in the last three and a half years. I was quite active in restructuring the business in Europe, growing from a very small adjusted EBIT margin to a double digit. Since end of last year, also took over the global purchasing group, which means getting more traction on the purchasing. Before that, from 2009 to 2015, I was running the aftermarket business unit for SAF Holland for all the regions across the globe, and was responsible for the spare parts business and also increasing the service stations worldwide. I've been to more than 140 countries, working on six continents so far, and I'm very glad to be here. Thanks for joining us today. All right. I would like to guide you through the agenda of today. We have basically 5 points, 2018 in a nutshell. I will talk about that in a minute. Then the financial performance of 2018 will be done by my colleague, our CFO, Matthias. Then coming to the market development, 2018, also forecast for 2019. And then the CEO, means my agenda, what are the top priorities for this year? And at the end, of course, we will talk about the outlook for 2019 and also 2020. All right. So we have a couple of bullet points. So basically, in 2018, we achieved a very strong sales. We overachieved. We achieved 1.3 billion in 2018. That was quite strong. And also the EBIT margin were slightly below guidance. Let me point out one thing. Because we had the discussion internally, the last guidance we had was 7 to 8%, and we were coming out at the lower end. We changed that because it said at the lower end, for me, 6.9 is not the lower end. If we say 7 to 8, we have to hit the 7. So 6.9 is not what we have to achieve. We have to increase that, okay? Just to make that clear from the beginning. We decided to keep the dividend stable for 2018, so we are coming in with 45 cents per share. Then we also invested quite a lot to increase and to boost our further growth in 2018, so for the upcoming years, when we talk CapEx. As you might know, we did a couple of acquisitions. So to name, for instance, York, which made us the market leader in axles and suspensions in India. We also purchased a company in Italy, Orlandi, is number three in coupling, highly profitable coupling business in Europe, and some others which are strategic investments for the future. Since January 1, which is point five, we are completed the management team. We have a new COO, Dr. Andre Philipp. He has been living in the United States for a couple of years and spent the last 7 years in China. He's an expert in operational excellence, which we need for a couple of priorities, which I'll come to later on. He actually speaks Chinese, and he will also help us to ramp up our greenfield successfully in China in the future. And as I said, he joined January 1, and he's very active. Last but not least, our CFO made a new syndicated loan of 200 million. To be able and to get enough headroom to finance future growth for the upcoming years and also get us the chance for some more opportunities in M&A, but I would like to come to that specifically to M&A section a little bit later on. Okay? Before we go to the other agenda points, let me please hand over to Matthias. Matthias will speak about the details of 2018 in depth before we are coming to the other agenda point. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Financial performance 2018. Where do we stand on our way to 2020? Well, first of all, on the sales side, we added almost 140 million organically, which corresponds to 12.2% in terms of the growth rate, which translates into 14.2% year over year, which is a great achievement. If I may jump ahead, Alex, for 1 second, to the 2020 strategy, just to give you one data point, because that question regularly comes up. Organically, we currently stand at 12.15. You might recall that the target towards the end of 2020 was 12.50 when we first announced the strategy. So one could say that we are still ahead of the curve, and we managed the organic growth strategy very well so far. Apart from the organic growth, you also see on the slide a contribution of almost 71 million in the year 2018. To also break that down a little bit further for you, 52.1 come from the York Group and 18.8 from Accent and Orlandi. Of course, the major part of that coming from the Orlandi business. Part of that contribution is offset by negative FX effects as depicted on the slide. If we then start at the very top of the P&L and look at the group, a little bit of repetition, because this was also included in the preliminary release before we take a closer look at the regions. Positive contributions from all regions across the year, growth across the quarters on the sales side, the acquisitions I already referred to, more specifically, double-digit growth in APAC China, still solid increase in EMEA, Alex's home turf. And then on the margin side, I would like to point out some details as well, which is the lower half of the slide. In absolute terms, to the lower left, 1.6 million lower and missing the 7.0% mark by 800K. But when you look at the performance, very strong towards the year end, because we actually caught up. Some participants thought we couldn't make it, so that is positive. I will comment on that in just a second, what I mean by that, specifically with a view to Europe. On the negative side, let's remind ourselves of the steel impact. That is, albeit a temporary impact, an impact of 11.3 million. For the full year on the negative side, add-on operating costs 9.6 million on the negative side, and then due to the focus on the soaring demand of the OE business, obviously an unfavorable product mix with the corresponding consequences on the bottom line. If we look at EMEA on the next slide in a little bit more detail, favorable performance in Southern Europe, Spain, Italy, and France, but also Poland and Russia contributing strongly. Europe is the region where you find the contribution from Orlandi and Accent, the 18.8 million that come as a contribution from the M&A side. On the margin side, it is important to remember when we compare the Q4 performance year over year that the Q4 2017, as discussed at the time, did contain a one-time purchasing rebate of 4.5 million euro. So when we do the year-over-year comparison in Q4, it is not that the European business dropped in margin, but if we take out the purchasing rebate in 2017, we actually come to a favorable result there. Why is that? Well, it is because of the continuous process improvements and certainly economies of scale in our headquarter plans down the road from here in Bessenbach. Moving on to the Americas, a region that we have certainly spent a lot of time on with you throughout 2018 for given reasons. First of all, if we look at the upper half of the slide, we see the positive trend and performance on the sales side, specifically from the OE sector. Of course, with certain capacity bottlenecks throughout the entire supply chain, which is important to remember because we did make a conscious decision to take on some inventory to be able to deliver on time to those OE customers, which is then reflected in the inventory and working capital numbers on subsequent slides. I shall come to that. I touched on the additional operating expenses of 9.6, the higher steel prices of 11.3, and would like to add that the net impact from steel prices in Q4 was still negative with 1.1 million. When looking at the slide and you do the number crunching, don't get confused when you look at the Q3 number, which shows an adjusted EBIT margin of 5% for the third quarter of 2018. This is where we had the one-time impact of the partial termination of the medical plan in the United States, an impact of 4.4 million. On the next slide, we have taken this out. This is a slide that we have shown before, which is why we only show an adjusted EBIT margin of 1.6% on this slide. The purpose of the slide is to show the consecutive quarter-over-quarter improvements. The strategy that we played in 2018 from quarter to quarter has paid off and was successful, yet we are absolutely mindful of the fact that the speed at which the recovery is kicking in is not where we wanted it to be, which obviously impacted the overall group margin at the end of the year. If we then move on to APAC China, which in 2018 was still reported as one segment, this is changing as of January 1. When we meet again, hopefully meet again in May for the Q1 reporting, this is split into two different segments because we made the personnel changes and changed the approach to managing the regions. APAC will become its own reportable segment, and so will be China. Yet right now we're talking about 2018 in review. We saw good growth in APAC China coming from both the organic side as well as the contribution from York. I already referred to those 52.1 million for the May to December period, because that was the period this business was included in the P&L. Yet, we already discussed this with you in the preliminary earnings release. Given the very close relationship we have with some strategic partners in the Chinese market, we did see an organic decline in China in Q4 due to the trade sanctions, which had an impact on the sales line, but also dropped through to the bottom line because, as it says on the lower right of the slide, this certainly had a negative impact on capacity utilization because some of our customers actually built their trailers completely in China and then shipped them to the U.S. If that business declines significantly, then obviously the utilization in our Chinese infrastructure is lower, and then we cannot really cover the cost there. If we then look at the CapEx side for 2018, and this is important to understand as we go into 2019 because we will increase further. Alex will come to that later in 2019. Here I would like to point out some of the things that we have already done because they play into what we have planned for 2019, and that will be supportive of some of the initiatives that Alex will introduce in a little while. The 40.8 million that you see in the upper left represent a 50.4% increase year-over-year. Where did we spend it? Well, we spent 18 million in Europe, 16.8 in the Americas, and 6 in China. What was it for? Well, if we start with the 6 in China, that is the preparation for the new production site, our greenfield in Yangzhou, to capture the growth in the Chinese market where we have the structural regulatory drivers that supports especially the evolution of the premium segment that we are strong in, and where we have captured quite some growth and market share in previous quarters. In Europe and America, we have certainly spent the money on replacement investments as well as expansion investments, and this should pave the way for further productivity increases into 2019 and beyond. Without wanting to jump ahead too much, yes, this is also a result of the company being under-invested in previous years. If this comes as a little bit of a surprise, that is a reason, but if we want to perform and capture the growth, we have made a conscious decision to make the corresponding investments. With that said, Obviously, that also results in an increase on the depreciation line, which is shown at the bottom of the slide, around about 20% more in depreciation in the year 2018. Net working capital, another hot topic because it obviously corresponds with cash flow, which is close to the heart of the CFO in 2018. Net working capital was up by 43% or 51.9 million in total. From those 51.9 million, 45.7 come from an increase in inventories. This, as I said earlier, was consciously decided to secure delivery and protect market share, in particular in North America, where we did not lose market share, and therefore we believe that this decision was successful, which is also reflected in the strong sales and thus delivery performance from the plants in the fourth quarter in across the world and in particular in the United States. Having said that, if 45.7 out of 51.9 come from inventory, you can already get a feeling for the strong performance, and I have promised this in our Q3 call that I would focus the organization on net working capital management, but in particular on cash collection topics. So while sales went up significantly, accounts receivable or trade receivables, as it says on the slide, only grew a little because we did collect very successfully and had the organization focus. A reflection of this is the strong performance in operating free cash flow in the fourth quarter of 58.3 million. And with that, we came to a free cash flow of zero, if you sum it up. Yeah, that was a bit of a rhetoric break there because that is a little bit difficult to convey, but if you do the number crunching across the quarters, you actually do end up at zero. Yeah. Whether intentionally so or not, I will leave that up to you, but that's how the math actually works out, if you don't mind me saying so. This is a very strong performance in Q4 and a clear move in the right direction. Yet, let me say two things. We cannot be happy with the free cash flow performance that we showed in 2018, number one. We will continue to focus on that, and I will leave the commentary on that to Alex in a little bit. But number two, please do not extrapolate the Q4 performance into future periods, yeah? Because that would be taking it one step too far. Yet the clear message is we will continue the focus and work on this to improve the performance. And with that said, I come to the last slide, which is the dividend proposal that was resolved by the Board of Directors this week, earlier this week, which we will propose to the shareholders' meeting at the end of April. Stable dividend of 45 cents per share with a payout ratio of 42.4%. This is in line with the dividend payout policy, which foresees a payout in the range of 40 to 50% of net income. When we look at the payout ratio, we also need to take into account some of the non-cash items that affected net income. I would like to mention two. One, the first one I referred to earlier, is the 4.4 million partial settlement of the medical plan in the U.S. And two, a 7.3 million valuation impact from the call and put options of our acquisitions, where we in the first step only acquired majority stakes, but still have the sellers or the former owners and managing directors on board. This is an impact of 7.3 million. Reflecting that or taking that into account, we still deem the stable dividend to be appropriate because we're confident to return to higher profitability levels corresponding with higher cash flow levels in future periods. And with that said, I already hand it back to Alex, who will spend some time with you on markets and then represent his initial CEO agenda.
Before we go to the hot topics in 2019, or for 2019, let's spend a second and check the markets, how they developed in 2018, and what the forecast says for 2019. So basically on the left side, you can see the EMEA region, which is basically or predominantly the European markets. As you can see, in 2018, the truck business remained on the same level, only reducing by 1%. Trailer increased by 4%, whereas the forecast for 2019 says truck is going to increase by another 5%, and a trailer is supposed to decrease by 10%. We now go to the middle section, the Americas. 2018, very, very high level of growth with truck at 27% and trailer also record high with 12%. 2019 remaining on a very high level by outgrowing another 3% in the truck business, and trailer remains on the same high level with only plus 1%. Taking a look to China, 16-17, extremely high levels for both truck and trailer. 2018, a decrease of 8% in the truck section, 4% in the trailer section, and 2019 outlook says the truck is going to be reduced by 11% and trailer flat with minus 3%. Having said that, I would like now to jump to the hot potatoes for this year. I think most of you are waiting for that, what we are going to do, which is the CEO speaks my agenda. And I would like to talk first about some challenges we have. You can see this on the left side. We have challenges specifically in the North American, so to say, in the U.S. market when it comes to efficiencies in sales, operations, and also sourcing. And also, as Matthias elaborated on, we have to work on the free cash flow generation. How we are going to do that? The three major things. Point number one, tackling U.S. market and solving our issues we have with a project called Forward. I will speak about that in a second. Also safeguarding the execution of our China strategy and also working with a couple of measures on an effective network and capital management. This is the highest priority for our management team and myself and the whole team to restore sustained profitability in North America. 2017 and 2018, we didn't do a good job in North America. Canada, Mexico was quite good, U.S. The whole plant consolidation we did beginning of 2017 went south, totally south. Increase in truck output, increase in trailer output made it very, very difficult to keep the margins. We had to keep the stuff out of the door. We had extra logistics costs. We didn't work on the sourcing management. So that was basically a couple of reasons why we didn't perform in 17 and 18. I will not have that going through the year 2019. We will solve this. We had the same issues in Europe 3 years ago, where we came with 2 to 3%. We are now double digit. And I'm not saying that Europe, that Americas will be double digit, but we will tackle this and we will solve this. So the challenges, as I said before, inefficiencies in sales. What are we going to do? You can imagine we have products, we have customers with very, very low margins. Even products with negative margins, we're not going to do that. I've been twice to the U.S. already this year. I will be in the U.S. in April again. I will sit with the team, dig in every single customer. I will dig into every product group, and we check out whether the margins are okay or negative. If not, we have to take measures. Measures are slightly increasing our prices, keep the customers, or at the end we have to say, I'm very sorry, but we cannot keep supplying those products because our business is not changing money, right? So this is one thing. The other thing, we still have some things to do in the purchasing. In Europe, we have a very, very dedicated sourcing team. I was taking care of myself in the last 3 years, and that was one of the cornerstones to grow the profitability. We are also going to do that. We got some specialists in from outside. We have a good team. Part of the European team is also helping the U.S. to gain traction also of the on the sourcing side. Well, I have passion for aftermarket, as you might know, running the business from 2009 to 2015 for the company. We still have also opportunities in the aftermarket. We have to take those opportunities, which will help to gain sales, but also profitability in the United States. And also what we did already by January 1, and this will go through the whole year, we are passing on the steel price increases, which happened in 2018. There is a delay. Some customers have 3 months delay, some 6 months delay, but we are also now passing those on. This was more the sales side and the purchasing side. On the operations side, as I mentioned before, we have a new CEO on board. We also have now a new VP operations on board, JD. She joined us just a couple of weeks ago. She's also an expert in restructuring and also operational excellence. She is dedicated 100% to take care of those issues in our plants. So to say here, we have to streamline our plants and the supply chain, optimize, as I said, the direct material. This is purely sourcing, and also regain operational excellence within our factories we have in the United States. We already kicked off that project by March 1, which was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We have 31 dedicated people, team members, mainly from the US, Canada, and Mexico, with some people from Europe. They are dedicated 100% to make that happen. And we also, what we did, we took 5-6 restructuring experts from the outside, which help us take traction. Timeline, as you can see, improvements to be visible in the course of 2019. We hope that we already gain traction in the second quarter of this year and also then go in the third and fourth quarter of this year. Let me make another statement here. I don't like underperformance. Okay? We don't have underperforming people in the European business. If we have underperformers in other regions, I will take them out myself, and then I make the others perform better. This is the only way how we come back to normal adjusted EBIT margin level. So, having said that, top priority, management team, myself, US. Second bullet point, executing the China strategy. As you might recall, we are spending, or we spent last year, and we are also spending in 2019, a low double-digit million euro CapEx amount to open a new greenfield in Yangzhou, which is about 2 hours outside of Shanghai. This is 46,000 square meters of production facility under roof. This makes it the biggest plant we have in the group. We have a couple of other plants, and we are going to consolidate plants into that one greenfield. We need to safeguard
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference will recommence shortly. Please stay on the line. Thank you for your patience. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. The conference will be recommencing shortly. Please stay on the line.
You will hear music until the chairperson will open the...
This is what we would like to do. We have a dedicated task force, specialists in net working capital, taking care of inventory. They are checking every single stock we have and warehouse around the globe. Dig into that. They're working for us for many, many years, have all the part numbers in their mind and know what we can do with out of those part numbers and then make special sales to our customers. So saying it again, they will take care of inventory management, but also take a little bit more traction in gaining more money and overdues in from our customers. We showed that also in Europe it's possible because here the figures are in the right position, but we need to roll that out globally. This will be led by Matthias himself. We have weekly and bi-weekly councils. Our people are traveling the globe and really check every cornerstone, every stone, and every warehouse that we achieve our targets here. Those three measures are, as I said, the top three priorities for 2019 for the management team and myself. They're all operational to solve and safeguard our guidance. So, having said that, coming to the outlook, we summarized the financial 2018, the last outlook and guidance we did for 2019, and also again on the right side you can see the numbers we came up with for the strategy 2020. I think I don't have to speak about the financials 2018, everybody's clear with that. So to summarize 2019 guidance, sales up by +4% to +5%. Adjusted EBIT margin around the midpoint of 7% to 8% in the 7% to 8% range. The rest you can read. This is our guidance. Okay? I'm not going to change this now. This is our guidance. But having said that, and since I'm only new 3 weeks in that role, I'm just a little bit familiar with the Chinese market and the US market, give me a little bit time to dig into US more deeply, also in the Chinese market, and if there is anything which doesn't correspond to this, I will let you know as soon as possible. But for the moment, this is our guidance, and we stick to that. We crunched the numbers in the last couple of weeks, and this is the guidance. We will not change it. Okay? Strategy 2020, we came up with in the course of 2015. We said by end of 2020, we would like to achieve 1.5 billion, including M&A, with an adjusted EBIT margin higher than 8%, net working capital ratio constant at 13%, Let me say one thing. We're on a good course to achieve those targets. We did some M&A last year. Matthias told you the figures of York and also the addition of Orlandi and Accent. If we have the chance to do another bolt-on acquisition, which makes sense from a product, market, and margin standpoint, we are going to do that. What we will not do, just simply to achieve 1.5 billion, to make stupid things. Just to buy another target to come to the 1.5 and then have another construction zones behind that. We only will do another M&A target if it makes sense for the company. I just wanted to make that clear. All right. Key takeaways. We can tell you, management, myself, we're 100% confident that we fix North America, and we fix North America this year. There is no 2020 for us. We ramp up China successfully, as I said, by safeguarding the whole thing with the German expert team. We are going to enhance our network and capital management, and we are going to take back control of our performance by reaching the operational excellence we need specifically in the United States. Thank you very much.
So thank you very much. I would now like to open the question and answer session. If you ask a question, please state your name and your institution. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Philippe Laurent from Berenberg. A couple of questions from me. You speak about this product portfolio review in North America and mentioned the fact that you are going to probably drop some products or clients if the profitability is not there. Could you mention what kind of products you are thinking about and what kind of effect on the total top line you're expecting from that?
So we are not talking about complete product lines. So don't have in your mind that we are not selling any axles anymore or fifth wheels anymore. That doesn't make any sense. But if you skim through 25 different part numbers, you will find at least a couple of thousand which are not profitable or not profitable enough or even negative. And we have to tackle every single part number to then increase the margin and the overall result in the United States.
But do you have already a sales or a total volume in mind, what that could represent?
Well, I still do not have a total volume in mind because, as I said, I'm going again back to in April to the United States and spending a whole week digging into those 25,000 different part numbers with the team. But from a historical knowledge we know from Europe, that you have roughly 10% of the total part numbers, which is not a 10% of the total sales. But you can speak a couple of million and then being increased either in margins or you simply don't make $5 million US dollars in sales anymore. But this will then margin a lifting. So, but at the moment, we don't have exact figures. Please give me the time for next month. Then we are working that out. And we will execute at the spot.
And the second question is actually with WABCO being approached by ZF. So firstly, do you see that that deal has a high likelihood to happen? Secondly, would that change anything to the way you do business with customers such as WABCO in case customers or suppliers such as WABCO, sorry? And what do you think would happen perhaps also to the Haldex stake, and if that Haldex stake held by ZF and also by Knorr-Bremse would come to the market, would you look at that again?
Very tough questions, and a lot of them. Basically, I don't know if this deal comes through. I don't know. WABCO is a great company, great sales, great margin. This is the second time ZF is approaching WABCO, as you might know. Basically, WABCO is not a big supplier of us. It's just purely number three. So our biggest suppliers in that range is Knorr-Bremse and Haldex. We don't buy that much from WABCO, so we are okay with that. As I said, if it comes true, I don't know. We will see, right? We basically have, as I said, Knorr-Bremse and Haldex, and if they are going to sell the shares of Haldex, I also don't know. But maybe coming a little bit along your question, what I hear between the lines, at the moment there are no thoughts to give it another try to take over Haldex. Does that answer your question?
Jasmin Stein from Commerzbank. Three questions, if I may. So first of all, in America, you stressed that you have not lost any market shares in the U.S. I'm wondering a little bit, just comparing the numbers, so looking at the yields they reported in the last year, FX-adjusted sales growth in the ballpark of 29%, and your numbers for America is below the underlying market growth for trucks and trailers. So could you please elaborate on your comments regarding market shares in the U.S., if possible, maybe also on the two product groups. And the second question, just on working capital, if I do a back-on-the-envelope calculation.
Can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, sure. With regards to working capital, so you mentioned some $46 million related to additional inventory to address the supply chain bottlenecks. So if I subtract this number, then the working capital ratio would be around 10% of sales, so a very good number. Could you elaborate on the 100 basis points improvement you have generated there then year over year? And why are you so conservative on your working capital guidance and going forward? So just on the actual numbers and 50 basis points improvement for the current year and also going forward. And then with regards to CapEx, so the guidance for the current year, for 2020 is also at 4 to 5% CapEx in terms of sales. So should we reach in a way that you spend some a higher amount of cash in the current consecutive 2 years, and then we should see a reduction to the, say, traditional CapEx number, or is it something which will stay for some time in terms of CapEx development? And sorry, just a last question with clarification on your 2020 guidance.
I need a bigger page, please.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So that's definitely my last question. on your 2020 guidance. Could you elaborate whether this only includes the acquisitions you have done already and announced already, or would this also include, because I was a little bit confused, or could this also include additional M&A? Thanks so much.
Okay, I will have some claim. Well, first question was in respect of losing market share in North America. If we talk North America, the biggest market and the only market is the United States, because in the other regions you don't have any truck manufacturers except Kenmax in Mexico. Well, this is, how can I answer that question now? Basically, I would answer, if I would speak with my salespeople, I would send the calculator to Neu-Isenburg, which is not very far from here, because if the market grows by 27%, and you grow in the fifth wheel market by 27 to 28%, you are not going to lose any market share. We have our figures, we have an external source also who checked that. I can definitely not confirm that anybody gained any market share. We are on the same percentage like we were in the years before. The thing is only if all of us grow with the market with the same percentage, you are not gaining any market share. You gain your overall volume. That's clear. But it's not market share. But we also gained like 25-26% in the fifth wheel market. So there is no shift in any market share. I cannot speak with Fonteni, but as far as we know, Fonteni also is in the same range because Fonteni is number three. So Holland, SAF Holland with the Holland fifth wheels, two different types. We are number one, clean number one, and Jos being second, and then we have number three, which is small percentage that's still Fonteni.
I take the two questions in the middle. So to say, first one was related to working capital, second was on CapEx. On working capital, what is it that we would do with the increase in inventories? That's how I understood your question. Can we further optimize that? Will we actually use that? The clear answer is yes, because it ties in with what Alex showed in terms of the improvement program, the efficiencies in the plants and so on. Yet, at the same time, we will also need to dig into this, which is part of the work of the expert team, to really identify the slow-moving parts, and this is also part of inventory management, scrap in one or the other area and get rid of that. But that is exactly where Alex is an expert leader on, together with the team. We will just need to roll this out across all of the locations. So I am confident on that. You then went on to ask, and correct me if I misunderstood the question, whether the guidance on the net working capital ratio would not be a little too conservative. I will admit that you could argue that it is relatively conservative, but please allow me to say we deliver against it first and then we adjust, because maybe in the past here and there we have promised one or two things which we didn't stick to. So we will be the first two, because we usually sit in front of you, to adjust that guidance. We would certainly like to come out better than the 13, right? But for the moment, let's focus on the execution and rather deliver and report on it than go in too optimistic right now. As for the CapEx, you see from the chart, or from the guidance chart, the 4-5%. This is as far as the current, and this is obviously difficult to answer, but as far as the current midterm guidance planning, midterm planning would foresee, a phenomenon that we calculate with for around the next 3 years. Again, difficult to say because we run through this process every fall. But beyond those 3 years, we then go back, and that was your question, we then go back to what we at the moment see as a range between 3.5 and 4. A little bit mixed, but the bottom line of that, and that's the answer to your question, higher than in previous years. Yet, every year we will review this, and then obviously also need to measure ourselves against return on investment. 2020 guidance.
Yes, I know. I have it here. Okay. All right. 2020. Please recall that we originally said by 2015 we would like to achieve 1.5 billion, which has a certain portion of M&A. At that time, we also reported 1.25 billion is organic growth. 250 roughly we would like to add to achieve the 1.5. Having said 1.25 by end of 2020, and if you, as we heard from Matthias, roughly last year we had an M&A portion of 70 million. We are already on a good way. There's only a small gap to close. Of course, we will not stop selling and selling profitably in the future. So we are ahead of organic growth. We are only with 70 million far away from achieving 250 million M&A. But as I said before, we will not make stupid things just because to reach the 1.5. And I think this is in the best interest of our shareholders, you, because you own this company, and it has to be in our interest to deliver performance, and this is the reason why we're not going for every M&A target.
If I may just add two sentences to that, as you would expect from a board of management, well, we continue to monitor the market. We follow our very diligent process on long lists and short lists, but as Alex said, on his short-term agenda as well as on my short-term agenda is not necessarily the execution of major M&A activities. That would distract the organization.
And may I add whether Haldex nor WAPCO is on the list?
Thank you. Three questions, please. First on the US, second one is on the restructuring, and third is a more broad question on markets and products. So first question, basically, from what I understood, is that Q1 in operational extra costs is likely not to be clean. How should we think about stripping out steel price tailwind you might see compared to 2018 of the performance in the subsequent quarters of 2019, please. Second one is, you mentioned also kind of measures with extra teams sent to China and so on. Is there a guidance for the restructuring or adjustment line in your EBIT guidance? And third, Mr. Geis, now that you have been a long time at SAF Holland, could you probably give us a broad indication how you think, generally speaking, about your market presence around the globe and your product portfolio? Thank you.
I'll take the first two questions, Feigling. Thank you for those. Situation in the U.S., Q1, how to think about the year, and in particular steel prices. We will report on that, and you would expect this answer in May when we reconvene. But the one thing that I will just repeat is we have started to pass on those steel price increases. So while I'm not in the business of forecasting steel price developments and raw material markets, there should be a positive effect from that. But please accept that I would want to leave my answer at that. As we move through the year, and Alex indicated that, we expect a stronger impact from the improvements in the U.S. in the second half of the year, which is not to be understood as a hockey stick effect in the planning, but it simply makes sense given where we come from and given the initiatives that we have kicked off, which need a moment to kick in. I will say, though, that also me personally, I'm extremely delighted to have André Philippe on board because it's a pleasure to see how fast he's gaining traction and moving things along. But again, also on that topic, we will report quarter over quarter and let us show that we can do this and deliver, and then we can discuss the results. As for the restructuring guidance, what do we have included? There is a clear no. I can't answer that question at this point. I will say I'll be as transparent as I was in previous periods when it comes to the adjustments, because we're in the middle of kicking all of this off. But we will be transparent and we will explain what we're doing so that you have the insight on how the numbers interplay. I hope that's an acceptable answer. Market presence, Alex.
Yes. So basically we have four areas around the globe. Let's start with the one we are sitting in. That's EMEA, which is basically Europe. As you saw, the truck market is supposed to increase slightly in 2019, whereas the trailer market drops by 10%. 2018 was a very, very good year for the trailer market. We not only outpaced the market growth, because what we did, we increased capacity a couple of years ago already. who made us ready. We opened 2 years ago our facility in Turkey, which runs fully occupied with a two-shift operation. We have the two plants here in Germany for the axles, which is the main contributor to the overall sales in Europe. We are gaining market share. We have a lot of long-term agreements, some of them 2, 3, even up to 5 years with our trailer manufacturers, with increasing market share. And so we are quite confident that the market for us in Europe will be as good as it was last year in the mix. Aftermarket, due to the increase in population over the last, or massive increase in population over the last 2 to 3 years, aftermarket is now also kicking in, which helps increase the sales of aftermarket. As you might know, profit is not a dirty word, so we like the profits coming from the aftermarket. This helps a lot. On the fifth wheel side, we are only number two in Europe, by far number two. Jost is market leader here. That's fine. We could increase market share, but we don't want to do that, because if we start a price war, this doesn't make sense for us. So we're okay with that. So going to China and APAC, let's start with APAC. We are quite strong in Australia. The market is quite good. I have been there 3, 4 weeks ago on my own, visiting more than 10 customers, speaking with them. We also increased here the market share, fifth wheel and in axles. The biggest second market for us at the moment is India, except China. India, as I said before, we bought York last year in May, and we have roughly a 45% market share now in India when it comes to axles and fifth wheels, axles and suspensions, sorry. So we are also going to grow that in the future. That's the plan. Otherwise, it wouldn't have made sense to buy York. And we also can use those products for other areas, in for instance, in Asia, like Indonesia, Vietnam, and other tiger states. Coming to China, you saw there was a drop in 2018, both truck and trailer. Yes, there is a drop this year, slightly, in truck and trailer. So be it. China is the biggest CV market in the world, by far bigger than US, far bigger than Europe. Nearly, if you combine Europe and US together, nearly the same size. We only have a single-digit market share, so the only way for us is up and gaining with the new products, like I said before, disc brake and air suspension, and getting traction here. So this is the plan. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I'm Tim Schulz, Pareto Securities. I have two questions. First one is with regard to M&A. Which amounts, I've understood that it's not your strategic priority at the moment, and I think quite rightly so. But which amount of money would you be able to spend and willing to spend at max in the current situation? Because of the relatively weak free cash flow situation, your net debt has increased. Your EBITDA is down. Okay, this is expected to go up again. But as CapEx is going up relatively a lot, free cash flow is going to stay weaker than in the past, probably. So with which levels do you feel comfortable in your cyclical business with regard to how much you would be able to spend? That's one question. And then secondly, with regard to the guidance, you're guiding more or less an improvement at midpoint of 0.6 percentage points, something like that. Can you be a bit more precise with regard to regions? I would guess that probably Americas is improving more than the rest of the business. But if you would assume that Americas would, it's just my guess now, would improve or would be able to be improved by more than 1 percentage point, that would mean that the rest of the business would be stable roughly. So maybe a bit more light on that situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schulz. I'll take both questions. On the M&A side, in light of increased CapEx, let's recap some numbers first. Net debt to EBITDA went up from 1. Round about 1 at the end of 17 to 1.98, or round about 2 at the end of 18, if you look at the precise numbers. So your assessment is absolutely correct. We have always said that somewhere between 2 and 2.5, we feel comfortable. Yet I have also said that if we find the right target, I'm perfectly happy to go beyond that. And when I say the right target, it obviously will need to include a certain delevering profile, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense, because then we would be sitting on a high net debt to EBITDA. In terms of which volume I would feel comfortable with, I would refrain from answering that question in too much detail. I will go as far as saying I feel quite comfortable in terms of the financial engineering piece of that, with quite different volumes. But again, it does depend on the right target, because what you wouldn't want to see is for us to let a right target go in terms of a strategic fit, the right margin accretive profile, the right delivering profile, etc. So that includes that could include relatively high volumes, but that is just speculation at this point, and we're not here to discuss speculative targets. But that analysis certainly is done in terms of the debt capacity of the company. So rest assured, I would be prepared for that moment, and we'll continue to analyze that should the need arise. As far as the regional performance goes, how should you think about that? You know, we don't guide on regions, but let me try to give you some color so that you can at least work with a few data points. Yes, the assessment is correct that the transition year 2019, the improvement towards the midpoint between 7 and 8, that planning is mainly based on improvements in the Americas. But to not end the answer at that, take for example APAC. How should you think about APAC? Because now that gives me a chance to touch on something that I didn't touch on when I presented the slide in terms of the profitability there. Yes, there was a dilutive impact from the York acquisition in what was then the APAC China segment, but the York margin, for example, was higher than the 5.8 that the group showed in Q4 alone. So that acquisition and its margin profile is moving exactly in the right direction. And I'm not trying to lead you astray and focus on a small piece of the business, but I'm trying to express that you should think about the APEC region and how we want to manage it going forward to not be dilutive to the 2020 margin aspiration. And with that, you're left with Europe and China. Europe hopefully continuing to stay strong on the margin improvement in the Americas. And I commented on APAC, and Alex commented on what we want to do in China earlier. And hopefully that helps you to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Thanks. Jan Erik Schmidt from Lloyd. I just have a couple of questions about the investment, the CapEx planning for 2019. We see a huge increase, maybe a little color on where that actually goes into. Going forward, we're talking about underinvestment in the past. And if we then look at the increased CapEx ratio, we will see an increase in D&A. So is that like the you only have a plan for 2020 with higher than 8% EBIT margin, but going forward, we're going to see kicking in higher D&A, so is that going to pressure down the margin, or how can you kind of like compensate for that? Then maybe one question about the KPI of the variable payments for the management team. What are those, especially for the new CEO? What are the KPIs there? Then one question about M&A. Strategically going forward, is there any plans to maybe go into vertical integration like you tried with Haldex? Are those any plans, or we were talking about bolt-on acquisitions. Is that only to kind of like widen the product portfolio or the region portfolio, or is there actually plans on maybe doing some acquisition in those directions? Thanks.
Okay. Let me start with the CapEx 2019 and 2020. 2019, bigger portion of the overall CapEx is going, of course, into the greenfield operation in Yangshuo. As I said, biggest plant we have around the globe, 46,000 square meters, highly automized in both in axle suspensions and in landing legs. So we are spending a lot of money in machinery, in robots, to make that as efficient as we can, this also then goes along in US and in Europe. US was underinvested in the recent years, and that was also the issue why we couldn't keep up with the capacity demand we had from our customer side. Just to give you rough figures, if we would have had the capacity in last year, we could have sold 10 to 15% more on everything, axles, suspensions, sliders, and fifth wheels, which would have made us then growing market share in terms of fifth wheels. We didn't have the capacity inefficiencies. That is mainly caused by old machinery, robots, welding lines. We started that already in last year, 2018, to tackle this, also in 2019, and this will also then go into 2020 to make us fit for the future. Basically, this is not margin dilutive if the depreciation goes up, because what we already did is we took some robots out, machines out, so the quality goes up. We don't have extra expenses for quality. It makes us more reliable. We don't have any truck manufacturers sitting in our neck who wants to make sure that we ship the right quality, which is really costly for us. So that is going to get back. And as I said, if the PPM rate goes down, logistics costs go down for extra supplies, and this will increase the output and decrease the OPEX. And CAPEX goes up, yes, but OPEX goes down, and as I said, it won't be margin dilutive. For 2019, 2020, let me say that we don't want to speak about the strategy 2025. We will work on that as a management team. We already did that in the last couple of weeks. So the plan, if we would like to go beyond 2020, is that we will finalize our thinking and our think tanks and workshops by the second half of this year. Then we will speak and have strategic meetings with our BOD, finalize that, and the plan is to go out with the plan 2025. By the first half of next year.
I will have the pleasure to talk about the CEO's incentives for a change. Of course, I could leave that up to him, but it gives him a breather. Allow me by starting to point out that in today's published annual report, for the first time, the company is finally individualizing the compensation for the management board members. So there you have all details, not only in terms of the structure, how we are compensated, but also in terms of the amounts along the regular reporting schemes that you would expect from a modern company. In terms of the short-term components, because the LTI answer would be a bit too long-winded, it's all in the report, but in terms of the short-term incentives, Alex and I sit in the same boat. It's sales, it's net working capital, and it's profitability. Very, very clearly. Allow me to add one thing to the CapEx to put this further into perspective, because what Alex said obviously hit the nail on the head. But if for 2019 you strip out the China investment, the plan for a new plant in Pune, India, which we will only do if we are on top of the other two priorities that you saw, right? And you then take out our investments into digital and IT, you come to a relatively normal run rate investment ratio, right? Which then leaves you with the replacement and expansion investments that you would normally expect. But what we're trying to express is that we foresee from year to year this higher level because we have just identified that need. Maybe that is helpful to put that in perspective. Now, given that you asked a number of questions, have we forgotten one?
No, I got one, but okay. Let me add something. I didn't even speak with the BOD about my new salary. Money is not a motivation for me. I get money. I'm okay with that. We can feed the family. We can have a good living. That's it. But money is not a motivation. And the thing we have to solve now is our internal issues, and this is not a bargain for more money or something like that. For sure, there will be talks, but they didn't happen so far. And as I said, we have to tackle our challenges first, and then it's okay. Okay? Last question was the vertical integration. We do that permanently with itsy-bitsy stuff. So if you see components, as I said before, in the US we have 25 different components. We dig permanently with teams dedicated to that into does it make sense, make or buy vertical integration. I personally like vertical integration if it's at the same price like buying from outside, because the more you vertically integrate, the more you get from the aftermarket. Specifically, if you add patents or design rights, something like that. So we do that on a permanent basis, and yes, we're digging into that regularly.
Philippe Laurent from Berenberg, thanks for taking the follow-up. When you were speaking about CapEx and the investments that you're doing right now in machinery and robots in the US, I've got the question actually whether you feel that the production process in Europe is already quite satisfying in terms of the level of automation that you've got in that process, or will you invest there as well in more robots, more automation going forward, especially against the background of growing wages in Germany and scarcity of available people in the market? And the following question would be whether the consequence, you were speaking about reducing OPEX, is going to be creating more operating leverage in the business, and how you think then about that operating leverage, especially against the cyclicality that you've got in the new business.
So speaking about the CapEx in Europe, we do invest. We did invest in 2017-18. The two biggest plants we have are located in Wessenbach. They are pure axle plants. One is for pure mass production, which is disc air suspension. We already invested in 2017 and 2018 in many more welding robots in fully automated lines. We upgraded the KTL, so we are much faster now. For instance, if you see the start of an axle production where you put in the pipes and the raw material until somebody puts the label at the end of the production on it, it's less than 2 hours, so it's 1 hour and 40 minutes, something like that. So what we did already, we increased the capacity with less people in the course of 2018 by a couple of percentage points, and the latest evolving stage we are going to reach is now in the course of June and during the summer closing period. So we are closing 2 weeks in summer to finally make the latest upgrades to those facilities, and then we are at the final stage for the time being. This gives us a higher output with less people. So we did that in the past, and we also will, of course, do that in the future. Because as you said, getting the right people specifically in the production, it's not that easy anymore.
I took your second question as asking where's the operating leverage in the business, or what do we have left, how do we look at that? The answer is, and Alex started on that, there is operating leverage left, even in Germany, because if you look at the performance that Alex and the team delivered in Europe, and at the heart of it, the production in Germany, you can see that the margin development clearly reflects that over the past years, we have accommodated any wage increase and we have outperformed that, right, because we just added the margin. That does not only come from a fabulous performance on the sales side or a market that was in a good mood. That also comes from continuously working on structures and processes inside the plant. And there are clear targets for the plant leaders to continue that journey. Part of it does come from automation and IT, that's for sure. But let's not forget that in Europe, since March 2017, we also have the Turkish plant that we have leveraged very successfully also in 2018, because it does give us the flexibility to cope with additional demand that we cannot just accommodate inside the German plant, or rather where we find an improved structure that is much more efficient after speaking with customers, how we deliver, and I always call that back into Europe out of Turkey, because it is the same quality. And if you then find an agreement with the customers, and a lot of the customers are very favorable to this, how you share logistics costs or whatever, there are certain territories that are easily delivered to on the east or in the southeast of Europe from the Turkish plant. And we have, for lack of a better expression, played with this during 18 by moving this to a second shift, sometimes a third shift, and that's where the leverage is. Last comment, if we move outside of Europe, because that's always the prime example, I think we talked enough about the potential leverage in the US, but simply improving operations. But even in China, the streamlining of the organizational structure in China, the plant structure under one roof in the greenfield, on top of it a China holding company so that my administration becomes a lot easier and more efficient, that's also part of the operating leverage, because this will give us the wiggle room to be much more efficient, because you know we have the Corco plant in Inner Mongolia, and that is not easy to manage in such a large territory. So that will come closer, we'll move in there, and there is that leverage. Okay?
And maybe may I add, in the European plants, on the German plants, we work with 8 to 10% of outside workers. So we can adjust within a day. That gives us the flexibility to then scope with new market developments and also reduce the cost overnight. Any more questions?
Thank you. There's actually one last thing that I was a bit puzzled, that you mentioned that you increased your inventory in the U.S. so drastically, while at the same point in time you're mentioning that you would have been able to sell more if you had been able to deliver more. So the question is, why did you put this on inventory and not give it to the customers?
Well, basically, inventory is not a finished product. The issue was the bottleneck is the production. First of all, we had issues getting the right people or increase the people in the production. And as we said, we had a very old, let's say, machineries and robots. So we simply could not increase our production capacity. And that was the issue. So you get single parts in, you have to somehow weld them, you have to paint them, finish them, ship it out, and that was the bottleneck.
And at the same time, that process is a time balancing act, of course, if you are confronted with a distressed supply chain to begin with, right? So you really need to make sure that you have the parts when and where you need them, rather than having to wait for them. Because if you recall our reporting throughout the quarter, we had, as part of the add-on operating costs, we always talk to you about those freight in and freight out costs. And they come from that distressed supply chain when you need to rush things into the plant and then rush it out. And if I take it in early enough, then I can avoid those costs. But yes, of course, it's a fine balancing act, because I tie up my cash in that capital, but I avoid those additional costs, which is not to imply that I want to do this forever going forward, because that's exactly where the improvements are. But for the moment, I think we were in terribly good company throughout 18 in the U.S., given the state the market was in.
All right, no more questions. Thank you very much for joining us today. Hope we enlightened you a little bit, gave you a little bit more insight. Sorry sometimes for my directness, but this is how I am. I put things on the table and then provide solutions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.